fly?
She's just hovering. It's not that impressive. But do you have to undermine everything that I do? You are such a player hater.
You're a jerk. Wow, nice insult, Hannah Montana. You got any more harsh digs?
You know what? You are never a good friend.
Even when we were little, you used to steal my toys and pour lemonade on my bed. And now I'm meeting your boyfriend. See? At least I'm consistent. Why'd you need him? Huh? You could have anybody that you want, Jennifer. So, why Chip? Is it just to tick me off? Or is it because you're just really insecure?
I am not insecure, needy. God, that's a joke. How could I ever be insecure? I was the snowflake queen.
Yeah. 2 years ago when you were socially relevant.
I am still socially relevant.
And when you didn't need laxatives to stay skinny.
I am going to eat your soul and shit it out, Miss Nikki!
Thought you only murdered boys.
I go both ways.
Welcome to Syndicate, a film and TV podcast. From our screens to your watch list, we gather to share and discuss your next favorite. Join us as we want you to spend less time scrolling and more time watching. And now, here's your host, Armand Haddad.
Hello, and welcome to Syndicate, where we want you to spend less time scrolling and more time watching. I'm your host, Armand Haddad, and welcome to Episode 9. This season, we are exploring the hidden gems of films, or films we probably passed over watching. Joining me in the studio today is Allie. Allie, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Of course. Currently, Allie is a graphic designer here in the Chicago area. However, you probably know Allie best for her online persona, Juicebox Online, and for being one-third of the gaming stream team, Daddy Killers. So Allie, tell us more about Daddy Killers and your Twitch channel.
Sure. People ask us all the time, how did you guys become the Daddy Killers? And I like to keep it mysterious and be like, maybe it's like Lady Killer. But the real origin story is a person on Overwatch was named Daddy and they kept killing us and we vowed revenge. And that was our personal Discord. And it just kind of transferred over to our stream team name. So, yeah. But We are a roommate stream team. The three of us, the official Neens, and I Wanna Believe, and Juicebox Online, which is me. And we stream almost every day of the week. We have one day off, but you can find us on there after work playing together. We're in each other's stream, and we have a really fun community. And it's very small, but it's growing. And it's definitely a fun group to be a part of.
Nice. I would say that's a good way to like end your day after a long day at work. It's like, I'm going to chill and watch some gamers do their thing.
Well, it's definitely nice, too, because there's a lot of interaction between the viewers and the person streaming. And it's we build these inside jokes and we build this rapport. And so it's more like hanging out with your friends after a long day of work. And that's what's so inviting and endearing about the platform.
Now, do you guys play together or is it usually like solo?
We play for the most part solo because we each have our own Twitch channel. However, There are times we will play games together where we have played a couple Resident Evils together. We've played some team racing games together. So if it fits with the schedule or there's a game one of us is more looking forward to, we will do multiplayer. We are looking in the future. I believe there is a way to co-op stream and have two streams running at the same time. So we're looking into that right now. But right now, it's mostly a solo stream for the most part, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah, I mean, I've spent many times online on Twitch watching gamers. It's quite addicting.
Mm-hmm. It's the emojis.
Yes, that, and it's kind of like, it harkens back to like my like N64 days or Super Nintendo when I'm at a friend's house and I'm just like having fun just watching them play the game.
Yeah, I'll admit I did not understand Twitch and I think it was maybe my age a little bit, but my roommates really loved it. So I was a little confused starting it because I'm the sort of person who wants to play a game and not watch. But I did finally understand how they felt when my roommate streamed Mario 64 the other day. And I just remembered being little, sitting next to my dad, watching him play. And I'm like, okay, I understand why people like to do this now.
Oh, yeah. And that title's a classic.
Right.
Once again, if you want to check out Allie and her streams, please visit her Twitch channel at twitch.tv/JuiceBoxOnline. And now, today we're going to discuss an unjustly maligned horror film from 2009 by Academy Award winner Diablo Cody. For this episode's film recommendation is Jennifer's Body. Now, Allie, before we really get into the plot and the detail and the characters, what were your initial thoughts on Jennifer's Body?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. So, do you want my initial thoughts before I watched this movie or after?
Let's do both. First, like, how many times did you actually watch this movie?
I have seen this movie a total of 2 times. And both times okay. I've seen it were this year.
Oh, wow. Recently.
Yes. Before I saw this movie, I did not want to. And I think this is a testament to why this movie was so poorly, not received, but how it was poorly marketed. And I remember how much drama Megan Fox was going through, not of her own fault, but there was a stigma around Megan Fox when we were younger. And I think at the age that I was when this was happening, my kid brain was like, Megan Fox, bad. So I didn't watch this movie and the trailer never incited me, you know?
Right.
So it wasn't until my roommate sat me down, and she has a habit of just putting movies on and we just watch them. And when we did that, I went, oh, wow, why did I never watch this movie before?
Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, we're really going to get into the marketing aspect of this film back in 2009. But like the first time I watched the movie was in 2009 when it came out in theaters because, like we're going to get into later, I was the target audience for that film, apparently. 18 years old.
Marketed target audience.
Yeah, straight up. Like you will like this movie. So, yeah, I remember going to the theater, like, you know, this was like hot off the heels of Transformers, kind of, a couple years prior.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, like everyone knows Megan Fox. And I was like, okay, let me check out like her own movie. This is like her movie. So I watched it and I had some preconceived notions. And then I think it was like during the first act or like halfway through the second act, I realized like, oh, this is a really good horror movie. Like, joke's on you, marketers. I'm a horror fan. So this is awesome. And I remember leaving the theater. Like, I was like, wow. Like, I went in thinking it was going to be like stupid. And I left like, this is amazing. This is a really good horror movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely a sleeper hit.
Mm-hmm.
Before we really get into walking through the plot, a thing we like to do at Syndicate is the 60-second elevator pitch.
Please stand clear of the closing door.
So I've been there, you've been there. We're trying to, you know, tell our friends about this awesome movie, but we don't have a lot of time to do it. So I want to simulate that right now. Allie, are you ready to summarize the whole plot of the movie without major spoilers in 60 seconds?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I'm on a game show. Yes, I'm ready. Final answer.
Okay. All right. So you have 60 seconds to tell me the plot of Jennifer's Body in 3, 2,
oh, the plot?
1.
Wait,
go.
It's my pitch or plot? No.
Oh, your pitch.
Okay. I was like, oh, the plot. Oh, I was not ready. Okay. I'm ready now. So Jennifer's Body is a horror comedy written by Diablo Cody, as you mentioned, who also wrote Juno. So right there, you already know the script is hysterical. And so this movie really plays on gender dynamics and it reverses gender stereotypes in horror films. It also uses common horror tropes and it changes the narrative. For example, how they talk about horror films and sexuality. And this film also, as you mentioned, it stars Megan Fox, it stars Amanda Seyfried, and it also stars the talented and slept on Adam Brody, my mans. But the one reason why I think, and it's personal, and as we sort of discuss why people should see this movie, is I think we owe it to Megan Fox as an apology to see this movie. I did not see this movie because of preconceived notions, and this is one of her best works, and we owe it as an apology to Megan Fox and Diablo Cody, but mostly Megan Fox. I went a little over, but yeah.
No, with 3 seconds to spare, like, that was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yay.
Yeah, you pretty much summed it up. Like, it's kind of crazy how, because when I saw it back in 2009, I was like, this is a really good movie, but I never really watched it ever again. And like, now there's like this resurgence, mm-hmm. like, you know, over 10 years later. And I can't believe that people are talking about this movie and have such high regard for it. And it's not nostalgia, because like you just saw this movie, like, you don't have any nostalgia for it. So it's like people like actually take it on its laurels and be like, hey, this is a really good movie and you should check it out. And it has a good message too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Not to go off book, but I definitely, one thing that drew me to this is there's definitely a big increase in the popularity of occultism and mysticism and stuff like that. And I think that could be also a big reason why this movie is gaining or garnering popularity right now.
Oh yeah, like the occult and Satanism is a huge theme in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, for the time, I think it was kind of not very prevalent. When Diablo Cody was growing up, it was very prevalent in the 90s, like, as mm-hmm. like a cultural movement. So like now, with like everything being in a circle, like everything's cyclical with culture, like mm-hmm. it's becoming a resurgence again. So totally,
exactly,
Megan's
yeah.
body itched that desire.
Mm-hmm.
Going into the plot, the movie opens up with a girl in prison. We don't know who she is, but we're getting a monologue from her. And all we know is that she's really strong, and she's a bit unhinged, and she's placed in solitary. What did you think about that intro?
It's definitely very off-putting, especially if coming from Mean Girls, Amanda Seyfried, you know?
Yeah.
So you're used to this dumb kind of blonde role, and you just... And then, I was sort of... Because I've just rewatched this from having watched it a few months prior, the beginning's a little confusing, especially when the marketing has pictures of Megan Fox everywhere. So you sort of come mm-hmm. in with this, who is this strong chick? I thought this was about this other strong, crazy lady.
Right.
So it starts you questioning, which is a fun hook, but it is a very jarring opening, especially when it's what you've been led to believe from the trailer is like, this is a high school film. You're like, why are we in prison?
Right. It's not even like juvie. It's like straight up prison, like Orange yeah. is the New Black. Prison penitentiary.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought of when she was in prison. I'm like, Orange is the New Black. That's, yeah.
So, yeah, we're introduced to Amanda Seyfried's character. Her name is Needy, mm-hmm. and she's in prison. We don't know why. All we know is something went wrong, and she has a friend, and her name is Jennifer. So we're going through not the eyes of Jennifer, even though she's the main character in the titles aspect, but mm-hmm. we're using Needy's character as a surrogate for the audience to walk into this world. And after the prison sequence, it goes back in time, and we are in high school.
Joy.
Yes, joy. I love high school. And side note on the marketing, like, we can get into it now. The way this film was marketed was like we said earlier, Megan Fox was like the big driving force of the movie, and she's super popular because of her roles in the Transformers movies. Mm-hmm. So she's like the hot person in town.
Yes. She 2007 was Transformers, and then I believe 2009 was Transformers 2 when all that was happening. Mm-hmm. So they grabbed Megan Fox, and although this is a woman driven production team and a woman-focused cast, a male board of marketers marketed this, mm-hmm. and I believe Diablo Cody said it in the recent E interview that they wanted to market this for women, and one of the marketers just emailed back the three words, like, Megan Fox hot, and that was their vision for the marketing. Like, they just total, what's the word?
Misogynistic?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, it just blows my mind how the marketing team chose to go in that direction. And I think it's because, you know, in hindsight, looking back, because of, like, right now, like, true crime and all that stuff is, like, very, very popular. And the main demographic for that type of media is women. So it makes sense to market this movie towards women. Like, it's a female driven movie, and it has to do with, like, women, like, not, like, I would say the movie really passes the, is it pronounced the Bechdel test?
Oh yeah, I know. Bechdel or something.
Yeah. Like, it really passes it because, like, you can remove all the men besides the victims that we're going to get into. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't change the plot of the movie. Like, not really. So that's a good sign. But it just blows my mind that the marketers chose to go in that direction. Like, oh, like, Megan Fox, she's attractive, so let's market this towards men. And I think they really missed the mark because...
Definitely.
Obviously, they're not going to appreciate the movie.
What's really strange to me is that this is the follow-up to Juno, not that, like, not story-wise, but mm-hmm. Diablo Cody's script.
Yeah.
So how did they do so well for Juno? And, like, obviously it's a different marketing team, but how, like, Juno was marketed towards, you know, women, motherhood, but how could this not translate over to her next film? Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah, I think there was a notion that girls wouldn't like horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they wanted to market it towards young guys, but the way they did it, like, totally didn't translate. Like to prepare for this episode, I watched some old trailers from the movie. And, like, this happened to me so many times where I'm, like, recommending an older movie, like, oh, check out this movie, let me send you the trailer. And I look for a good trailer, and they're all stupid. I'm like, this is not what the movie's about. Like, at all, the tone's off. Like, they kind of, like, repackage it in this weird way to appeal to the lowest common denominator. And that's what they did with Jennifer's Body. They made it seem like it was, like, Needy is jealous of Jennifer, and, like, all the guys, like, want to be with Jennifer. It's like...
Yeah, I actually watched the trailer right before we hopped onto this together, and I was taking notes, and they included almost every scene where Megan Fox is starting to unzip her clothing, and only a couple of the guys, and of course the scene where they go, where, not to get ahead of myself, but the kiss between the girls, they allude to that. So it's definitely this, like, male fantasy that they're trying to bank on. So of course the movie's gonna not do well when they don't get that, you know?
Right.
And the trailer makes Jennifer out to be like this, like, succubus or something, this, like, sexy lady coming for all the men, and it's not what you get.
Exactly. Like, there is a sexual nature to it, and that's very central to the theme and to Jennifer's character, but it's not to be like, it's not for the male gaze. It's a commentary on both the mythology of the succubus and also some larger themes that we're going to expouse upon soon. But, like, it just blows my mind how they just took all those scenes out of context to weave a different narrative to sell it to people.
Yeah, it definitely not what you get, that trailer. And in retrospect, watching that trailer, it just kind of hurt a little. It feels like it failed the movie.
Yeah, I looked at the box office numbers and didn't make a lot of money.
No.
Like if I was a studio exec, I'd be like, whoa, okay. You know, you win some and you lose some. Like, whoops. So, but yeah, let's continue on with the story. So after the flashback, we find Needy and Jennifer are best friends. And Jennifer is the popular girl. She's a cheerleader. while Needy is the token nerd of the high school. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like this odd couple going on. Like, the driving force of the first act is the rock show. So they go to the rock show, and what happens at the rock show?
They're at the rock show, and they go because Jennifer wants to meet the band. She is very forward about her sexuality. She really wants to try to get with the, I believe the guitarist, Adam Brody. And that's not his name in the movie, but I probably don't remember his name. So he's Adam Brody.
Yes.
But they find out that he's looking, how they present the scene is that he's looking for a girl who's kind of a flirt, but is a virgin. And so Needy gets upset that they're talking about her best friend behind her back. So she goes to yell at them and she's like, yeah, she's a virgin. Leave her alone. But in turn, that wants the lead singer of, what are they called again?
Low Shoulder.
Like, Low Shoulder. Thank you. I was listening to Through the Trees, their song that like for like 2 hours straight. And all I can remember is Through the Trees. But so that makes them want to target Jennifer more. So it's this weird, see, not weird. It's this fun dynamic of cat and mouse, but there's two different objectives for the two characters involved.
Yeah, totally. Like, they go with like two very different intentions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, Jennifer wants to hook up with the band because she really likes the guitarist, thinks he's cute, while Needy pretty much is just going because Jennifer's dragging her there. Mm-hmm. And she's just, I guess, trying to make the you know, a bad situation good. Like, she doesn't want to be there, but she's going to have fun.
And to note on that, I really enjoy the moment before this because I really enjoy how Chip is portrayed more as this. In major movies, I feel like Chip's character would be a woman. It would be a woman being like, oh, you're always out with your friends. We had a date, blah, blah, blah. And I really enjoy how Chip has all these more feminine qualities. And I think that that's one of the gender dynamics I had mentioned in my pitch. So I enjoyed that part where she's like, nah, Saturday's for the boys. I gotta go with Jennifer, you know?
Yeah, like, it definitely reverses the roles and it makes it more interesting. I think it's a hallmark of Diablo Cody's writing. Like, she's a fantastic writer and it really shows in the script and with these characters too, because like, you feel like they are real people too.
Definitely.
Like, you feel like these are your friends or people that you would have gone to high school with. So it kind of makes me wonder if they're based upon like her friends growing up.
It totally could be. I know she has mentioned, I don't know if I saw an interview for this movie, but I saw for Juno, and totally, she does draw from her experiences and like where she is in life. So there's definitely probably influences. I would bet.
Yeah, I could totally see that, especially in the setting with the dive bar and the band coming in, because like, I don't know if you knew this, but Diablo Cody grew up around the Chicago area.
I actually, fun fact, I didn't know until last night when I was streaming. One of my friends in chat started giving me all this Diablo Cody like lore, and I was like, "Yeah, I'll keep streaming. You keep giving like this is research. Thank you." So that blew my mind.
Yeah, she went to a high school. So we went to high schools in the Chicago suburbs that were not too far away from each other, and she went to one right in the middle of ours, our different high schools, which is mind-blowing. And like in high school,
I think her high school was a rival to mine too. Like, that's wild.
Yeah. For listeners that don't know, she went to Bennett, which is a high school in the Chicago suburbs. So, yeah, it's funny because I don't know if she drew inspiration from the Chicago suburbs, but like there's a few local venues in the Chicago suburbs area that a lot of local bands go to. They play music there. And then sometimes like the bigger bands go to these venues. Just like in the movie, Jennifer's Body. Like, even though it takes place in Minnesota, where she moved from Illinois to Minnesota later in her life after college, I think some inspiration, I would like to think, inspired from our area, our neck of the woods.
Oh, I'm sure. Even I went to ISU my freshman year, and I had friends in bands, and they would play at the little bars on campus, and it was such a similar scene. So you get that. Yeah, that dive bar, I feel like it's a truly Illinois experience, how that felt.
Yeah, like I was watching, I'm like, oh my God, that feels like a time warp. It's like, am I in high school again? And this is awesome. So yeah, she really captured that time period so perfectly in that scene. So the band starts playing and something weird happens. So what exactly happens while they're playing their soon-to-be hit song?
Oh, the stage catches fire.
Yeah, somehow the stage catches fire and it spreads throughout the entire tavern, which is like wood paneled. So it's like everything's flammable in there. And it's next to a bar, which is flammable liquor. So the whole place goes up. And what happens after that?
Well, Jennifer, it could be the alcohol, it could be a state of shock from the fire, but sort of breaks down a little bit. And mm-hmm. Needy rushes them out and says, we've got to go. We can go get food. I'm hungry. We got to go. But Jennifer really wants to go in the van with the boys. And I think this is very indicative of the time, but Needy goes home. Well, Jennifer goes in the van and leaves, but Needy goes home and calls Chip, and I'm not sure. I don't think she calls the police, but I know in this day and age, I feel like my friend would punch those guys and grab me out of there. So I feel like that's very indicative of when this time period was.
Right. And like, given the situation too, like this band performed at this dive bar and then the dive bar exploded and like there's people mm-hmm. on fire in the background, like everyone's running for their lives. And like this band's like smoking a cigarette, like, hey, yeah, ignore that. Want to come to our creepy van?
Was it a white van too? Like really creepy.
Yeah, it was a white like stereotypical serial killer van.
Like yeah, Scooby-Doo's. This van is totally cool. Like it's fine. Ignore. Yeah.
And one of my favorite lines from the movie is like she's being like dragged, like she is consenting to this drag. Like she's like, oh, I'm gonna go to their cool van. Like, and Needy's like, don't do it. So that's like mm-hmm. one of my favorite exchanges of the movie because it's so ridiculous. Like, I'm going to check out their cool van.
Wait, no, don't do that. Yeah. Stranger danger.
Exactly. So she ignores stranger danger and she quickly realizes this is a mistake. So mm-hmm. they're driving down the road and Jennifer notices a book in the car. And what does the book say?
Oh my gosh. I don't remember what the book says. I just remember the like horror on Jennifer's face when she realizes the bad situation. I was staring. It was the Megan Fox effect. I was staring at Megan Fox. She's beautiful.
So the book, I believe it said witches or something, but it was an occultic book.
Oh, yeah.
It had a giant pentagram on it. So quickly Jennifer realizes something's not right here. And you overhear the band muttering to themselves, like, is she a virgin? Are you sure she's a virgin? And
oh, yeah, I'm totally a virgin, she says.
Yeah, I'm totally a virgin. And then she uses that against them, saying like, oh, like you should let me go. Like, I'm a virgin. I probably don't know what I'm doing. And they're like, no, like you're perfect for what we need right now. And so that scene, I believe, fades to black or cuts to Needy. Like, we don't really know exactly yet what happened mm-hmm. at that time. But what we do know is what happened later on that night when Jennifer reunites with Needy. So what exactly happened there?
So Needy's on the phone with her boyfriend, Chip, and she doesn't exactly know what to do. Jennifer has not come home yet, and she's really scared. And then she hears noises in her house, so she decides to go check it out. And she sees Jennifer just eating what she can out of the refrigerator. And she goes to talk to her, and Jennifer just vomits this black goo got bile out at Needy, and Needy is mortified. And they have this exchange where Jennifer, I believe, pins Needy is this the right spot where she pins Needy to the wall, but then backs off and runs away? She says, like, are you scared? And then runs away. And Needy's freaked out and spends the rest of the night cleaning the floor and trying to believe if this actually had happened.
Right, because you would think that's a nightmare. It's like, my friend didn't possibly come here and act like a monster and throw up, like, black goo all over my kitchen floor. That's a very jarring scene. It really sets the tone for the rest of the film. It's like, oh, like, we crossed the point of no return now. Like we're invested in the movie. Like shit's about to go down. Like, we have to see how this story unfolds. And before we continue, I do want to note that I think a central theme that's prevalent throughout the entire movie, like, from the band to what Jennifer will become, I think a central theme is this sense of sexual predation. And because, like, the band, they had a goal, or they had a, they had a goal, and they're like, that's the girl we want. And they kind of, like a predator, like, targeted her and was like, we're going to use her and we're going to, you know, do our thing. So, very creepy. Definitely sets up the villain, sets up the tone for the whole movie.
Yeah, I believe Megan in her interview also said, watching it back, she realized how that scene made her feel in the moment with everything that was going on in Hollywood, how she was being objectified by men left and right. And she really could see those emotions she was going through in her portrayal. And I 100% agree with what you're taking from it.
Yeah, like, it's kind of interesting because I don't know.
Say Jen, I meant Meg. I'm sorry. I flip them sometimes.
Oh, yeah, because you can't help but see Jennifer as, you know, Megan Fox, or Megan Fox as Jennifer.
Hey, the marketing made it so, you know.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And another note on that, like, it's just interesting because during the time, I don't know if Diablo Cody was like privy to this knowledge, but like, this was when Hollywood was, quote, unaccountable for what they were doing, like, with the whole, like, especially now, like, Time's Up.
This was pre-Me Too. This was pre-Harvey Epstein, like,
Harvey Weinstein.
Weinstein, sorry. Harvey, this was pre-Harvey Weinstein. It was a lot of powerful men were not being held accountable for their actions.
Yeah, and now they are. Like, Harvey Weinstein is now in jail. Jeffrey Epstein, that you mentioned by last name.
Yeah, sorry.
He is, even though justice didn't get served with him, but he is dead. Hopefully, the rest of the people that are in cahoots with them will also go down. But time will tell. I think their days are coming and they know it. But back to the movie. So, following this night with Low Shoulder and the tavern burning down, the town is traumatized and the high school is traumatized because a lot of students were at that show when it burned down and a lot of them got killed. There's this air of trauma, like, waving through the high school, and we get this awesome cameo that I did not expect to see as J.K. Simmons. He is the professor for Needy and Jennifer. I was like, what? He's in it? And to note, the scene prior, Chris Pratt
cameos.
Was also at the bar.
Yeah.
I was like, what? He's in this too? Like, this movie's star-studded. No one's talking about it.
They've got a lot of good cast members in this film.
Yeah, whoever did the casting for this movie, like, good job. Like, you did a great job. I know it was a woman. I forget her name, though, but...
Yeah, I know, like, you said the name, I'm bad with names, but wasn't he the father in Juno? Like, they got some of the Juno actors to come back.
J.K. Simmons?
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know him best for his role in Spider-Man, Peter Parker's boss, or Cave Johnson from Portal 2. But yeah, he's a fantastic guy. So yeah, he's trying to, like, the school is reeling from what happened at the bar, and he's like trying to calm everyone down, like, hey, we're going to get through this, giving like this emotional speech. And Jennifer is looking a little different. She's acting a little different, too.
She's glowy. She looks perfect. She looks, her skin is thriving, and she is so bored with what's going on. She just wants to have fun.
Yeah, which is such a stark contrast from the night prior, where she was like super, you know, aggressive, and she looked terrible, and she was covered in blood, and we don't really know what happened to her. The audience is led to believe like she was raped or beat up, and now the next day, like you said, she's glowing. She looks great, and she's bored with the conversation, and she's a bit despondent, and it's kind of strange because she was at that event. Like, she was, like, she knew the whole place blew up, and she just doesn't care.
And Needy knows it's not a dream because she still has the goo under her fingernails, so she's very confused what's going on.
And Jennifer is just dismissing it, like, like, girl, you need a manicure. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, what are you doing? So that leads to Jennifer's first victim. So after that scene, we are introduced to a football player, and he is in the middle of the football field, and he's just lamenting the death of his friend. And Jennifer seemingly pops out of nowhere and confronts this jock. And yeah, what happened?
So I believe Jennifer's ex was in the fire. And so as a way to seduce and console the friend, this her victim is her ex's best friend. So in a way to console and seduce, I don't know if there's a weird word for that, maybe in German. She asks him, what is it? She says that her late ex-boyfriend said that they always would have been a good couple, the friend and her, and seduces him into the woods where all the animals come and watch as she devours him, I guess.
Yeah, she straight up eats him. Like, so she lures him into the forest that's next to the football field, and, you know, she's seducing him. She's undressing, but then he's getting a little weird about it. Like, he's like, something's not right here. Like, there's all these animal creatures around us. And then she shows her cards, and she transforms into this monster and then eats him, and he dies.
I really love about this movie, though, I love the use of the practical effects. And I know that CGI, it wasn't as big when it was coming out, but it was still there. But I really love practical effects. I think it makes it so much more, it feels more like art. Like, not that CGI isn't, but there's this warm human emotion with a practical effect.
Yeah, it feels real.
Yeah, that's what I really enjoyed about this movie.
Yeah, like, the thing I love about practical effects is sometimes it doesn't look real, but it feels real. Like, you feel like you can, like, touch it, like, it feels like real. And while CGI, quote, looks real, it doesn't feel real. Like, you could tell it's like a computer doing it.
Yeah. And that's, I know in the behind the scenes, you could see like the fake Megan jaws and stuff. They were cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And it, so her, she reminded me of a character in a movie that we reviewed on Syndicate earlier, Fright Night from 1985.
That's that vampire movie, right? And it's like a boardwalk. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, one of the characters, like, looked like Megan Fox, like, when she was transforming, like, with the huge mouth. And she's like, even though that movie was about vampires and not succubi, I still think thematically they could be the same.
Yeah.
Like, with the monsters preying on humans of a specific gender.
I mean, vampires seduce too. Succubi seduce. Just different end goal. Like, who knows? I'm not to judge what their end goals are.
I guess that could be the same because Jennifer... No, we'll get into it later, why Jennifer is feeding upon these young boys, or men, I should say. It's such a gruesome scene, and it really sets the stakes at play. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, we're not messing around anymore. Like, Jennifer is no longer the character that we knew her as. Like, now she has transformed, and whatever happened that night, like, we now know, she is forever changed, and now she's hunting down, men in this small community. Very terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because my absolute favorite line in the entire movie, and I remember this, I remember loving this line back in 2009, was so while Jennifer is devouring this football player, J.K. Simmons' character is leaving for the day, going home. He's going to his car, and he hears a blood-curdling screams coming from the forest, and his first reaction is, "Let it all out, man. Like, I feel your pain." I'm like, oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that was a good scene. And then after a while, he's like, wait, this doesn't seem right. But yeah, it's a great scene.
Right. So yeah, he, because the screaming becomes prolonged, he's like, something's not right. So he goes investigating. And what does he find in the forest?
He just finds him in pieces, doesn't he? Or does he find just a body part? I can't remember.
He finds him all torn up.
Yeah.
And like, he can identify like the student, like, okay, it's a kid that's in my school.
Oh, it's you see like his chest is like open, right? Or is that that's a different one. I'm sorry. Never mind. I'm getting ahead of myself.
No, his chest is open. I think that's her moniker for killing all these young men, is she like rips their insides out, like the chest cavity.
Yeah.
So he's led to believe there's a killer on the loose now. Like, not only did this place burn down and kill some students, but now there's a killer on the loose.
Mm-hmm.
This is very unnoticeable, but the movie takes place after that point 1 year later. 1 year passes by. And
wow.
Yeah, it's very...
I did not notice. Yeah, that's subtle.
It's very subtle, but yeah, blink and you miss it. So like 1 year passes by. And by this time, Low Shoulder, the band that played in the tavern, is
absolutely
elevated.
Of course I know this. Yes, you're right. Go ahead. How else would they have gotten famous in like a month? Okay.
Right. So they're elevated to superstar status following the tragedy. And that song that they performed in the bar is now...
Trees.
Yeah, Through the Trees is like the theme song for the school and... for the event.
Isn't like 3% goes to the victims or something? Really small?
Yeah. Buy it now and 1% of the proceeds go to the victims. And it's like, okay. So so there's a... I think there's a point why Diablo Cody made a notion to make it 1 year later. Because Jennifer's first victim was like soon after the event... of the tavern burning down. And then 1 year later, she's looking a little rough. Jennifer, mm-hmm. like the color's out of her skin. She has these dark circles around her eyes. She's just not looking good. During this time, there's no better way to say it. This emo kid that we're introduced to earlier in the movie has the hots for Jennifer. He was like, hey... And I love this line so much. Like, hey, like, you want to go out sometime? The Rocky Horror Picture Show is playing.
Yes.
She's like, you know, I don't really like boxing movies.
Yes, yes, yes. Because she thinks it's Rocky. Yes, that's what it was.
I was like, oh, this is great. This is so great. Once again, Jennifer lures the goth kid using her sexual prowess.
Well, it's also... I think it's remiss to not talk about I think a little bit of this emo kid does like Needy. I think it's kind of okay. Set up that way.
Yeah.
And I think he's respectful that Needy has a boyfriend, and who wouldn't want to go out with Jennifer? And so right. He does try to get with Jennifer. And there is this with women in their adolescence. This movie is very good about picking up the weird energy, the weird toxic nature that can come out of adolescent friendship. And it's I know for some reviewers, I saw like YouTube video essays, a lot of younger male audiences don't, or sorry, younger men don't necessarily understand that, where this is a little bit where I think more mature women who've gone through the adolescent phase understand this relationship a little better about Needy and Jennifer. So this scene for me feels like a little bit of a power dynamic where when Needy's like, well, I like him, I think he's sweet, Jennifer has that competition to her where she's like, oh, Needy likes him? Okay. And then chooses her victim.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're totally right. And that character attribute to Jennifer reverberates throughout the entire movie. And that's, that's how you know Diablo Cody is such an excellent writer, is because like those little things, those little setups have payoffs by the end of the movie.
Exactly.
Like there's so many, like this is being set up and now it's being paid off. And it's so satisfying as a viewer, be like, ah, things just aren't there to be there. Like there's intention with every single step in this movie.
100%. I think it's a testament to her writing too, that the same scene, you and I, with our different experiences, with however we identify, we pull different information out, but we still get so much valid information. It's truly, yes, it's a script, it's a movie by women for women, but it's not kicking anyone out of the story. I think once you have the right lens to see this film, you start to understand the nuances and what's happening, and then anyone can enjoy it. It's just, you come into it with a different perspective, if that makes sense. Whereas you saw something different from the scene, and I saw something different, but we're not wrong, you know? Like, there's just so many layers to this wonderful story she's created. Oh, I just love it. I get giddy.
Right. And, like, it's brought to another level with the subtleties and the acting from Amanda Seyfried and Megan Fox. It's a great movie, and I don't understand why it's so maligned. Like, because it's so maligned is what makes it such a hidden gem. Mm-hmm. But following this back and forth, Jennifer convinces the goth kid to, like, hey, like, I don't want to go to the movie with you, but you're welcome to come over to my place. I think I rented Aquamarine and we can watch that, or like something totally completely different from what he was suggesting. And he was like, oh, okay. Like desperate to, you know, just spend time with her. He's like, okay, yeah, I'll come over. Of course. And so the following scene is such a perfect snapshot of the two different characters of Jennifer and Needy. Mm-hmm. So what happens next, Allie?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I know we get this cut of the emo kid driving with the, like, juxtaposed, like, I can see clearly now the rain is gone song. So he's excited to go, and, like, there's this light in his life kind of thing, and it's a really fun scene. Mm-hmm. But also we have a lot of people talk about the scene, but it's the scene between Chip and... the scene between Chip and Needy where they plan to have sex together, and it's really clunky and funny at the beginning, where they talk about, they had mentioned this in interviews where it's really funny because, like, they don't normally talk about getting the condoms, or, like, she's like, put it in. And that's, like, I think one of Diablo's favorite lines. So, like, it's very different because, like, in a lot of movies, they were saying it just happens, but this is more about, it's really real and gives more humanity to these characters. And so they're experiencing this. So there's this uplifting moment of, like, the people being together, and then the emo kid and Jennifer going to meet, and then the scene flips where he's realizing, the emo kid, that this is not quite what he thought was happening, and he's scared, and Jennifer's starting to do her seduction, and Needy's having these visions while she's having sex with Chip. And Chip, not noticing anything, is like, oh, she's screaming because it's so good. But she's, like, in terror because she's seeing visions of the dead victims and Jennifer, how she saw Jennifer that night at her house, where and then we see the emo kid realizing what's going on, and we see more features of Jennifer with her eyes and the mouth again. Truly, but we don't see the death, but we see it behind a screen, and we see her body a little bit transformed before she goes to kill him.
Yeah. So, yeah, like leaving that, like seeing the shadows and seeing all that implied visual cues. Like, we know, like, Jennifer is no longer a girl. She's a supernatural creature.
Yes.
And she has needs and desires that are not what a normal human would want.
Probably not. I hope not.
Right. So, another thing to note with this scene between Needy and Chip is, like, since it feels so real and so clunky and awkward, it demonstrates what true love is, and like what true attraction and emotional connection two humans can have, specifically two younger people. And that's so wonderfully juxtaposed with the emo kid and Jennifer, because, like, even though the guy is so excited to be with Jennifer, he doesn't really know her. It's more of a, like, a lust relationship. Like, he's attracted to her, but he doesn't really know her. So I just love the contrast between the two. It's like, here's, like, a loving couple, and then here's, like,
a hookup, kind of.
Yeah, like a hookup. Like, it's not particularly the best intentions, and one of them has dire consequences, and the other one has like positive consequences. So, super interesting, and it really showcases the characters.
I also think it's kind of interesting because you're talking about this loving relationship. I think also something that's important to me in relationships is communication. That's my big number one thing, and I think when this starts, they have great communication, Chip and Needy. Like, yes, Chip gets upset sometimes with Jennifer, but it's interesting the end of their time together, because Chip starts to not listen to her. And this is also kind of foreshadowing what happens, where he stops listening to Needy when she is having this, I don't know, vision, has this premonition that something wrong is happening, and he's not listening to his partner. And that carries on throughout the film. I think it's very subtle too, as well.
Yeah. Like, so we're getting to the part of the movie where our main character, Needy, knows something's wrong, and she tries to communicate it to the person that she trusts, and they obviously don't believe her. Like, Chip does not believe her. Like, I would say any sane human would not believe if I was like, I see blood coming out of the walls, there's something wrong with Jennifer, I think she's a demon, I'd be like, oh, you're crazy. Okay. So, but this is a horror movie, so these things should be taken seriously.
I mean, if your friends are dying around you, take a little seriously.
Right. Oh, yeah. And then another thing I wanted to note about, so the emo kid, his name is Colin. When Jennifer is eating him, the camera focuses in on Colin's hand, and he's holding a rosary in his hand, which then goes with the theme of the occultism. So, like, I don't know if Colin was religious or anything, but at the end, he was holding on to something as a demon was killing him. So I thought that was very interesting, like visual storytelling going on.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it plays into the theme of, we mentioned it earlier, because Diablo Cody would have been like an adolescent in the 90s. Yeah, she would have been in high school in the 90s, and then college, late 90s, early 2000s. And during that time was a period called Satanic Panic, if you're familiar with that.
Yes, slightly, yes. I've heard it in podcasts, because there are some true crime podcasts out there about that craze and people being, it's kind of like, I don't know, not exactly like the witch hunts, but it was kind of like a modern day witch hunt, I feel, for some people.
Yeah, like America was, for the most part, like it was like peacetime. We didn't have an enemy to fight. So, well, we have to have some kind of enemy, like whether it's real or not. There's these Satanists coming. They want to influence our children and this and that. Be careful. Like, oh, she's a strange woman. Don't hang out with her. She has a pentagram. But but yeah, like, so Diablo Cody, like she expressed that she always wanted to make a horror movie. And like we said earlier, like this movie is the follow-up to Juno and it's such a strange transition. But she mentioned in interviews, like she always wanted to make a horror movie. And I think it really shows in the writing and the whole theme of Jennifer's Body, how much she loves the genre.
Oh, definitely.
And she's tapping into this, like, this satanic panic. Probably she grew up knowing about. So it's a huge influence on the movie. Because, like, I didn't remember it the first time I watched it. And, like, now it's, like, sticking out like a sore thumb. I'm like, oh, like, occultism is, like, a huge thing in this movie. And that totally went over my head. I don't know if it was like my age and I didn't really understand, but like
I don't
huge
think,
central theme.
To be fair though, when we were growing up, the internet was a baby. Like it was forums, it was dial up, and at least nowadays we have so much more access and ways and accessibility to text and research and things like that. So of course if you're slightly interested in demonology, occultism, mysticism, all that, it's so much more readily available now. Where back then, it might have been just that book that, you know, Lowe's Schilder got a hold of. So it's very different. We weren't really subjected to that at our age when this movie came out.
Yeah, like, I could totally see that. There's an abundance of media now, like you said earlier with the true crime podcasts, like, if you want to learn more about, for example, this subject, the occult and demonology, like, you can find probably 10 books, 15 articles within, like, 5 minutes. It's, like, it's not that hard to pinpoint, like, information now. And, like, back then, I remember going to the library for stuff.
Mm-hmm. And spend hours at the library.
Yeah, it's, like, I need to research on me.
Yeah. But now it's like there's iShare and stuff like that. It's information's accessible. I mean, libraries are still useful. You can still go there. But there's also a wealth of knowledge you can get through your library online. I'm plugging the library for my roommate because she works there. Use the library, friends.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great databases like at the library that is still useful. But majority of people, you know, go on the old Google to get all their info. Whether that's a good thing or not.
Also free.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But so yeah, the thing with the rosary, like I think that's for me a symbolism of Jennifer's descent into the thematic underworld, if you will. Like I think other than killing the jock, like her second killing is now the point of no return for her. It's like now she is on the, I guess she is like an agent of the devil now.
Yeah. Like she realized like it wasn't this one-off thing. Like this is her life now for sure. Yeah.
And it took a year for her to realize it, I guess. So following that scene, Jennifer appears to Needy again, but unlike the first time she met up with her, she is not covered in blood. She's glowing again. And then what happens in Needy's room?
Jennifer starts seducing Needy.
Yeah.
But Needy backs off and swears for one of the first times in her life, which kind of throws Jennifer off. But they get into this, a real fight, and Needy tells her to leave.
Yeah.
And Jennifer jumps out the window.
Yeah, and then before she jumps out the window, she does the, I guess, the exposition dump. So she explains.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. She explains what happened that night. So we know what happened that night.
Yeah. And it's such a great reveal because, like, you kind of know what happened, but, like, this, like, confirmed it. It's like, this is what actually happened that night. Would you like to explain it?
Yeah. So the band Low Shoulder, they didn't necessarily want a virgin because they're skeevy perverts. They needed a virgin for a ritual sacrifice so they could propel their career and become famous. It become a famous band at the expense of a woman.
Yes, makes sense.
So what happened? Yes. Yes. So there's this scene, which is, it's just so, I hate to say it's so good because it's so disturbing, but it's such an interesting scene where she's on the ground begging for her life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're around her singing, I've already forgot what song. Oh, they're singing Jenny 8675309, which a lot of people don't know anymore, but because of area codes, but yeah, they're singing wonder. Jenny and her. Yeah. They say, like, oh, you have to be, like, I don't know if they were having second thoughts about it or if she had to be not in a crazed state when she died for the ritual. And it had to be on a specific, I think the waxing or waning moon, I can't remember, but they had all these conditions. Mm-hmm. So they had to, I think they had to get in her specific mental state. So they're all around her singing that, Jenny, can I get your number, before Adam Brody's character just stabs her repeatedly until she dies.
Yeah.
However, because she was not a virgin, their ritual worked sort of. Because the requirements for the sacrifice was not met and she was not a virgin, she became this demonic succubus sort of creature. This demon inhabited mm-hmm. her body and now she wreaks havoc.
Yeah, like, I also don't know if it was a condition of their sacrifice, but so the town is named Devil's Kettle, very on the nose, mm-hmm. and it's named after the waterfall. And like I said earlier, with like setup and payoff, is like that's like said in the beginning of the movie, and it's like, okay, I wonder if that's just world building for world building's sake, but it's not, because like she is being sacrificed next to that waterfall. So I wonder if that waterfall, if the band knows, if that's like a nexus between the dimensions, between our world and the spiritual world, and they'll win favor of the Dark One if they do it there as opposed to any other spot. Like, it's very interesting. It's visually stunning, too. But yeah, it's a
very powerful scene, and it's very interesting. I do on my own time want to see if this ritual is based on anything. You might not know, but actually a couple of my friends and I actually do research into occultism and witchcraft. So this scene was very interesting for me, since I do a little of cleansing my crystals on the full moon and stuff like that.
Yeah, I gotta get that moonlight too.
Yeah, it's powerful, man.
Cleanse the rose quartz.
Yeah. Self-love, rose quartz.
Yeah.
It's powerful.
So I think it is based upon it, because knowing Diablo Cody's love for horror, so she probably did some research onto actual occultism and mm-hmm. ritualistic sacrifices. So she probably went down the rabbit hole to make her villains authentic.
Yeah, Diablo Cody, please give me your grimoire. Thank you.
Oh, that would be awesome. So, speaking of demonology, like after she's being sacrificed and she is reborn as a succubus, Needy does research on demonology. Mm-hmm. So she hears a story. After Jennifer flies out the window and disappears, she does research on demonology, and she learns about
and she goes to the library for it, remember?
Yes. She goes to the library of her high school to the occult section, which her boyfriend says...
How many high schools have an occult section?
Right. Yeah. He's like, I didn't even know we had an occult section. She's like, yeah, we do. It's very small, but we do. So she learns all about how to defeat them, which is a knife through the heart. which is very similar to the vampire mythos. So, like, succubuses are, they make me wonder if they're like a female version of a vampire. Yeah. Like,
well, no, because incubus is the male version of a succubus.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So,
they're probably cousins. It's fine.
Yeah. Similar attributes, different master, probably. So, yeah, she finds out how to defeat the succubus, and she's explaining it's a chip. And this is the second time she explains the severity of the situation to Chip, and Chip doesn't believe her.
Mm-hmm. I believe this is the scene where they break up, right?
Right. Like, it's surrounding a...
prom.
Yeah. Like a school dance, and she... it's a scene where Chip is, like, asking her out, like, hey, would you go to the dance with me? And she's like, you know, the demons are here in the high school, and they're trying to eat us.
We've got a little bit bigger problems than a school dance. But my mom wants pictures.
But my mom wants pictures, and I bought a corsage. It's $12.
Right. Those are expensive, though.
Right.
It's valid.
And hearing that, when I saw this movie for the first time out of high school, I was like, oh, man, I feel so bad for him. He spent $12. He has to go to the dance now.
That was a lot in high school.
It was a lot. That was like money for a while. So, yeah, they break up. Chip doesn't understand the severity of the situation. And it's actually Needy's advice. Like, she was like, I think we should break up for our own safety. And of course, Chip doesn't take it well. Like, he's like, she just, like, this is such a lame excuse. Like, okay.
I think the, like, one of the next scenes is one of my favorite moments of the film. I just really enjoyed when he's getting ready for the dance because he decides to go despite Nudie's warning. I love how his mom comes in and gives him the pepper spray.
Yeah.
Like, as a woman, I never personally have owned pepper spray, but a lot of my friends have. Their family members have given it to them. And I just, it's more prevalent for us to carry pepper spray. So just that moment with how men are being targeted, men are, you know, at night are going missing, and him taking care of himself and having the pepper spray. It was just a very, it was such an interesting role reversal. I thoroughly enjoyed that moment.
Yeah. It's a great, like, character building moment, because so he's getting ready for the prom. She gives him the pepper spray, and side notes, I carried pepper spray at that time in my life.
That's totally valid. Gotta protect yourself.
Like, I wonder if I was influenced from that movie, or if I just like, yeah, muscles can't beat pepper spray. So
that, wow, that's like iconic. I'm going to remember that line. Rock, paper, scissors, pepper spray.
It's like, I'm buff. Well, I have mace. Boom. So, and then his follow-up line is like so perfect too. And I remembered it to this day because it's such an iconic line for me. It's like, so his mom is handing him the pepper spray, and he's like, I don't need it. Like, I've been working out on the Bowflex. And I'm like, oh, I feel you, man. I feel you. I don't even know if they make Bowflexes anymore.
I don't think so.
But yeah, that line, I was like, oh, he thinks he's strong. It's so, so funny.
It's so funny, too, because, like, he still has that baby face to that to today. Like, he just, I don't know. I have that baby face, too. I understand, but... he probably could kick some butt, who knows, but yeah, pepper spray would have helped more.
Yes. Yeah, let's get into the third act of the movie, which is the dance and the subsequent events leading after that. So the dance is going on, Needy is by herself, Jennifer is by herself, and Chip is by himself. But on Chip's way to the dance, he is intercepted. And who intercepts him?
Jennifer.
Yes.
Chip is walking alone because Needy's not going with him. So Jennifer, who had previously in a phone call to Needy, had said to her, Chip's looking really good lately, as mean girls are wont to do.
Mm-hmm.
And she's insinuating, of course, what she's doing right here. Exactly. She goes up to Chip as a means to seduce him. Sorry, she goes up to Chip and talks about Needy and her concern for him as a means to seduce him.
Yes.
And says, you know, I really care about you. Needy's going crazy, blah, blah, blah. And they end up kissing on the field. And so then she goes to take him somewhere more private to do her succubi thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite remember how Needy realizes Chip was coming to the dance. You might need to elaborate on that part. I just remember the cool scene after.
Right. I think she knew he was going to be at the dance because I think everyone was going to the dance. But she didn't want to be coupled with him at the dance because that would make Jennifer jealous or envious. Oh, it is mm-hmm. envy. Like she wants what she can't have, or she wants what Needy has, or she's jealous of what Needy has. Something like that.
Oh, were they in the dance and someone was talking about the couple making out in the quad or something like that? And she had run out to find them? Oh. Was that what happened?
Yes, somebody. Like, should I go? Yeah. I think someone alerted Needy that Jennifer was hooking up with Chip.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was like, well, I have to go investigate it. So she went and she found the corsage mm-hmm. that he was talking about earlier on the ground. And we all know if you spend $12 on something, you're just not going to leave that lying around.
Oh, no.
So she knew something was wrong. So then Needy looked up and she saw an abandoned pool hall. I don't know why that was there. I don't know why it was it was dilapidated, in poor condition. Like, that small town needs to allot their budget to fix up that place. It's ridiculous. So
it's such a, it's a cool, cool atmosphere for the final, like, big battle.
Yeah, it's a great
but
set
also
piece.
Why is it there? I agree.
It's like, we need a creepy place. Abandoned pool hall. Oh, okay, we're done. So so Needy goes there and she finds Jennifer on top of Chip. But she's not doing what you think that they're doing.
Chip was pushing her off of him and said, like, this is not right, basically. Like, he does really care for Needy. And he was backing off. And I'm really fuzzy on exactly, but all I know is they totally have this cat fight and Jennifer levitates. And I just love the moment where Needy's just like, she's just levitating. It's not that impressive. And it's so funny. And she.
Do you have to undermine everything works that I do, Needy?
Yeah. And so they, it's kind of it's more of Needy and Jennifer hashing out a lot of their friendship issues that they didn't have the communication to work on maturely. It's definitely, right. You know, so that's what a lot of this fight is. And Jennifer does get stabbed and has the iconic, do you have a tampon line, which is hysterical. and I don't exactly remember how, but Chip does get injured and Needy tries to save him, but it's too late. But we get the true love speech at the end. But right. And I think this moment really gives Needy the resolve that she has to stop Jennifer. She can't do this because now Jennifer has crossed the line and killed someone who was really important to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jennifer starts feeding upon Chip, and then they get into an altercation. Needy and Jennifer get into an altercation, and yeah, that's such a great scene. When Chip tries to stab Jennifer, because like you would think, like, okay, that's enough to kill her, but we all know,
mm-hmm.
Needy knows, like, Needy tried to tell Chip, but Chip didn't believe her, that he needed to stab her through the heart.
Yeah, not the, like, side.
Yeah.
So close. Not that close, but.
After requesting a tampon to stop the blood flow, Needy does not have one. So then Jennifer flies off into the night. And then we get that beautiful speech by Chip. And then Needy is sent or is on the warpath to really take out Jennifer at this point. So Needy goes to Jennifer's house.
Mm-hmm.
And a thing that I took away, which was very interesting, which we're going to get into just a tiny bit, is like she is applying makeup to her face. So even though she just fed upon Chip, she's already deteriorating. So it's very interesting that her first victim, like she took a year before she felt the effects of needing to feed again.
So I didn't stop you because we hadn't gotten to it yet, but the first victim was actually that exchange student.
That's right. Yeah.
In the fire. And I didn't want to get ahead of ourselves, but now that the reveal is there. So she had I don't know how long that switch was.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was a couple months before her next victim. So with the next year, I wonder if there were a few more victims in between, but maybe not if how bad she was getting. Because the night of the fire, obviously, she was probably incoherent and has a victim. And then she feels really good with the second victim is like, oh, if this makes me feel good, she tries it again. And then maybe from that, she's like, wait, this is wrong. But then realizes with the victim a year later, I have to do this. I can't live or survive any other way. And just maybe lets the demon consume her. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah. Like the way you're describing it right now, it sounds like the hallmarks of a serial killer. Where they have their first victim and then they're satisfied for a while and then they need to kill again. And then that opens the door. They let the demon in and they really go to town, if you will, just like killing left and right, which is what Jennifer is doing at this point.
Exactly.
But unlike a serial killer, she needs to do it because she needs to eat their flesh to stay alive.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting that she is immediately, like within the same night, like looking like crap. So it's like, it's not satisfying her anymore. The thrill is gone, just like a serial killer. Like they're looking for that first thrill again and they can never get it. So it's like, oh, my next victim will satisfy that urge and it never does. And so they're like chasing the dragon. They have the final battle between Needy and Jennifer and it's balls to the wall. It's crazy. They're levitating.
Yeah.
They're special effects run amok. Like it's fantastic.
Yeah. It's a very, very powerful scene. The effects are awesome. The like you said, the levitating, the slow motion when it happens, the piercing of the heart and then the iconic my tit line and then Needy's your heart.
Yes.
It's very telling of the topic of objectification of women too. It's a powerful line.
Right. Jennifer's character is like she uses her sexuality as her weapon to lure these people into her little trap. And like, yeah, she didn't see it as her heart being stabbed, but her flesh.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting and great writing on Diablo's part.
Mm-hmm.
And then another aspect of that fight, which is interesting on a thematic point, she wore this pendant around her neck.
The best friend's pendant. When she, I don't remember if it's when they're levitating, but, or if it's when she, I think it's when she's falling down and the, is it a stake is going down into her heart? The pendant falls and hits the floor, signifying they're not friends anymore. I probably wouldn't. Yeah, I ate my boyfriend and it's over.
And stabbing her into her theoretical heart, which is the friendship between these two characters.
Yeah.
So beautifully shot by the director. And
yeah, that's Karen Kusama, I believe.
Yeah, who is he made many great horror movies, but I think Jennifer's Body is probably his biggest movie at this point.
Her, Corinne is a girl.
It's a girl? Oh, okay.
Yeah, she. I guess she did like Anne Flux or something. I don't know her.
Yeah, that's right.
I was just researching her before but I didn't get too far. But yeah, so it's a very woman-led panel.
Wow, I didn't know that was a girl. I thought it was just like a Japanese guy.
No. Nah. I think she worked on Juro, and that's why her and Diablo worked together.
That makes sense.
But don't quote me on that. I mean, you can quote me if it's right later, but...
Quote. Okay. So, yeah, so that's the death scene for Jennifer.
As right as that happened, the door opens and Jennifer's mom walks in.
At the worst possible moments, and she doesn't see that a demon is being slayed, but her daughter has been killed by her friend.
And Needy rolls over, just relieved that this is over.
Yeah.
But then now we understand how Needy got to where she is in the opening scene of the movie.
Right. Of her in jail. And the thing that we didn't know in the beginning, so the movie ended where it began. So she's in jail and she reveals to us, the audience, that she did not leave the battle unscathed.
She was bitten by Jennifer. And according to the, no one knows the lore, but if you survive with a demon bite, you absorb a little bit of their power. Mm-hmm. So that's why Needy's kicks are crazy strong, and we see her levitating in the jail. And with her crazy kicks, being in solitary confinement, there's actually windows, and she kicks out with her bunny slippers and walks out of jail and somehow finds clothes, I'm pretty sure, and then goes hitchhiking so she can follow her favorite band.
Yes.
Low Shoulder.
Low Shoulder. So, yeah. And I thought that's where the movie ended. And I was like, okay, she has these new powers. Like, she's not a demon, but she's imbued with the power of the succubus. Like you said, with the crazy strength. And that's how she's, like, kicking everybody around.
Mm-hmm.
But then the credits start rolling. And then there's a post-credit scene where she meets up with Low Shoulder. And side note on Low Shoulder, it's kind of funny because they're using the aesthetic of Good Charlotte. So I don't know if it's like a stand-in for a Good Charlotte band. So I just thought it was funny that they're so similar. But yeah, so she tracks down the band, and what happens?
I really like how this scene is filmed. It was during the credits, I believe, and it's pictures. And we see them on tour having fun at their hotel suite, drinking, partying.
Yep.
But then the pictures start to change to dead bodies in chairs and on the floor and the police coming and things like that. And the final shot, we see fans running towards the room where Low Shoulder had been staying and a hooded figure walking away who slowly looks at the security camera. And that's Needy.
It's such a great shot. And it's such a satisfying ending to the movie, because I was thinking about it throughout the entire. I'm like, so they sacrifice this girl to the devil to become famous. Like, are they not gonna have any repercussions for that? But yeah, at the very end of the movie, they get what's coming to them, mm-hmm. and they get slaughtered by Needy, and it's like, oh, all right,
that's so good.
A fantastic ending.
Yeah, it's definitely, I 100% agree with everyone. People call this a woman's revenge fantasy, and it totally is. Like, taking that power back from people who did this to you, it's so much better when you view a movie this way than Megan Fox hot.
Right. Like, and that's why I left the movie theater with the sense of, like, man, that was a really good movie, is because... Like, I went in thinking, like, okay, this is a vehicle just to show off Megan Fox. But, like, it's actually a well-written, beautifully directed horror movie that, like you said, anybody can watch. Like, it's such a fantastic movie.
Oh, I was also researching. I used to be a musical theater major, so this kind of perked my ears. But apparently, I don't know if it's official, but there's like a Jennifer's Body musical, and there's a Jennifer's Body comic. Like, there were still things being made. Like, so people still did enjoy this movie. And there was, like, 5 years after the fact, Diablo Cody wanted to try to do a TV series, kind of like, you know, the Buffy effect, where Buffy had a really bad movie, but then had a great series. But I think she's getting offers now, which I don't know if she can do it, because she actually wrote a musical herself. I have it written down. What is it called? Jagged Little Pill. So that was, the video I saw was from December 2019, so it's either probably paused production. I don't know if it opened because of all the COVID stuff happening, but that was the last thing she was working on. But I don't know what this resurgence for Jennifer Body, if that means there could be a green light for a TV show, or if the movie's so popular, is there a need for it? Because I did also read or see that they did want to do a sequel, but you can't really get a sequel when, you know, it does so poorly when it opens, you know?
Right. And I just wonder, like, what would the sequel be about? Because for all intents and purposes, like, the demon was slayed, and then you have Aniti as this character that fulfills her mission, which is to kill the band. So it's kind of like the story's done.
Definitely. So it's like, I wonder, the comic, I didn't get to read it, but I read that it's prior to what happens in the movie, and it's about all the victims, so you get a little world building. So I wonder if a TV show would more elaborate on something like that, and if a sequel would, I feel like maybe there could be more in the sense of what you were saying about the waterfall, like maybe this town has more to it. Then, like, maybe like the Hellmouth of like Buffy, there's more to this area than meets the eye. And this Jennifer is not like an only case in this town, you know?
Yeah. And then Needy becomes like a demon slayer. And she has like a team of
Needy the Demon Slayer.
That'd be cool. I'd watch it. And I would be interested in a musical too, because they made a Evil Dead musical, and they also did a Mean Girls musical. Mm-hmm. So it's possible. Like, and it could work if it's done correctly.
Yeah, there's a lot of movie musicals. I was watching some scenes. It seems like kind of a jukebox musical of what I saw, which I don't know if I was like on the right thing. So I'll have to like send you later the real info, but what I saw was like jukebox, which means it's like songs that are already made but brought into a musical. So like All Shook Up is a jukebox musical because it's all Elvis songs. Mm. It's not like songs created for this play or show.
Okay.
So it could be that. I'm not entirely sure, but I'll get you that info.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. So we walk through the themes of the movie, we walk through the plot. Mm. And now we come to the end of the show, and what we like to do here at Syndicate is the one reason why. So, to you, what would be one reason why you would recommend this movie to somebody?
I jumped the gun on my pitch, but my one reason why I would recommend this, I'm gonna change what I was gonna say.
Okay.
I think the one reason why people should see this movie is because it blows your expectations of a horror movie out of the water. It changes the narrative on tropes you love while still paying homage to what you love. It's beautifully crafted and it's beautifully thought out. Diablo Cody did a wonderful job, and everyone who touched the film did a wonderful job. And it definitely slept on.
Yeah, like, I couldn't have said it better myself. Like, for me, the one reason I would recommend this movie is because, like you said, it is a sleeper hit. Like, not a lot of people talk about this movie, but it's a fantastic horror movie, and it really, like, it changes your expectations on what to expect from a horror movie. It pushes the genre in a good way.
It's definitely like a good bottle of wine or like a good scotch. It just needs to sift, and then now we can open it and enjoy it. The scotch or the whiskey, it was great, mm-hmm. but now it's so relevant. It's so important today. I feel like this movie, it's so topical. It's time to uncork it. It's time to drink that scotch. It's time.
Yeah, like it really aged like a fine wine.
Yeah.
Or like your analogy with the scotch. Like
I was going for the wine one and I totally forgot what it was. So I'm like, okay, we'll just go to other liquor. It's fine.
Yeah, like age definitely made it so much better. And that's such a great thing with horror in general, is like a lot of horror, like the good ones, like get better with age. And like there's like the craft element to it that ages so nicely too. It's like, like you said earlier with the practical effects, it's like, how did they do that? And that looks so good. And so, yeah, it's such a beautiful story. I think it deserves at least one watch if you love horror movie.
Yeah, I forgot. I wrote, what did I write? I was one of the press conferences I watched, which is why one reason why I love this movie so much is that she has very Western influences, and in those movies, the horror movies are more warm in the tones, and that was a big influence for her and the director, I believe. And like a lot of movies today are so cold and sterile, is what they were saying. And I definitely think with friendship and sexuality and all these human characteristics to this movie, the warm tone just pulled it together and made it so tight. It's like a warm, gross, gooey, succubi hug. It's great.
Yeah, as a beautiful film grade, and it definitely, yeah, it looks awesome, mm-hmm. and it brings all the elements together in such a beautiful way.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have to correct myself. Eastern influences, sorry. Oh, so Eastern influences for the, I think, the colors, and then for the gray morals of the story, where a lot of the Western influences are cold and black and white. And I thought that was very important in her press conference about what's so different and striking about this movie. Yeah.
Everything's intentional. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I mean, props to the director on that and Diablo writing the story.
It's just chef's kiss.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's it for this time on Syndicate. We hope you enjoyed yourself. We've been talking about Jennifer's Body by Karen Kusama, and also written by Diablo Cody. Please check it out where it is available. And I'd like to take a moment to thank my guest, Allie, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was so much fun.
You can find Allie on her gaming streams on Twitch at Juicebox Online. And if you'd like to keep the conversation going, please add us at Syndicates on your favorite social media platform. That's CINEDICATE. And if you have any questions about the program or even media that we recommend, please reach out at info@syndicate.com or visit the website syndicate.com. Until next time, stop that scroll, spend more time watching. Bye.